I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sports ad free. That's amazon.com/sports ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, folks. Welcome to the Pro Wrestling Index here on the Anfield Index podcast channel. I'm your host, Andy Wales, joined tonight, as always, by my audio tag team partner, Mo Chatra, and Mo. Tonight, we've got a bit of TLC to talk about, and I'm not on about the 90s band.
Indeed. It's been a very interesting week for the WWE yet again, and topped off in terms of talking points by TLC, which is now brand exclusive to SmackDown, and it certainly brought its usual share of spills and thrills. So, plenty to talk about.
Yeah, I mean, before we get into breaking down the matches, I've got to say, Mo, I'm really disappointed because we had a tables match, we had a ladder match, we had a chairs match, we even had a TLC match. But where was the stairs match?
Well, without the Big Show being around, there's just no point, was there? He's the only one big enough and strong enough to throw those stairs around at will. And that was the only missing link from that show. And I think they even called it in the past table ladders chairs.
They did indeed. I was alluding to that one, yes. Tables, ladders, chairs and stairs. A bit like the next pay-per-view coming up on Raw. You know, it's roadblock through the traffic lights, third left on your third turning on your left, I believe, and then go across the roundabout. Or is it something like that?
End of the line, it might be.
Oh, that's it. End of the line. Not third turning on your left. No,
because, you know, just one title isn't enough. Now we have to have two.
No, it's not. And if you hashtag that, you won't have any space left to actually put anything on the tweet, so it won't be trending number one Twitter worldwide. Sorry, Michael Cole. So anyway, let's get stuck into TLC. And I want to start with the tag team titles. Heath Slater and Rhino, I refuse to call them Beauty and the Man Beast. I don't know where the hell that came from. Up against the new Wyatts. What did you make of this one?
Well, it was a match. You know, it's a shame in a way because Bray Wyatt, you know, we've talked about on this podcast on numerous occasions, has potentially a lot to offer. He's a guy with a lot of talent in the ring. You know, he's shown it in the past. He can certainly go. Randy Orton, you know, in the next few years will achieve legendary status in the company. Not so much for anything he might be doing in the next 7 years, but what he's achieved, you know, during his career in the company. And he's been there for some 14 years now. And, you know, his accomplishments are unmatched almost. And there's very few people, you know, Triple H, Jericho, John Cena, and that's about it, that can match his list of accomplishments. So, you know, both individuals you can argue are wasted in the tag team division, which is a division in on the SmackDown side, which isn't exactly overflowing with really exciting over tag teams. But nonetheless, the match was fine. It was a short match. It wasn't something that was ever going to be a great match. It was okay for what it was, and it was the right result. Wyatt and Orton won the titles clean after Orton hit the RKO. Rhino, and it was good to see a change of the guard, and it'd be interesting to see where Wyatt and Orton go as tag team champions. But Heath Slater and Rhino is an act that, for me, was already wearing thin, so it was the right time to make the change.
Yeah, I absolutely agree wholeheartedly on that with in terms of, you know, that was beginning to wear thin, and the whole joke thing that had gone run its course. And, you know, it's actually refreshing to see them put a title belt on Wyatt as well. Quite an interesting one. And it's, for me, it's come sort of, you know, maybe 3 years too late. You know, that he's a character that I don't think he's ever going to be, you know, a main event headline or anything like that. But he does connect with the audience. So I think putting a title belt on him just kind of helps maybe get him back up there, you know, get people believing him a bit more. And then when he actually does something, whether it's split in with Orton and they go back to a one-on-one, people will actually care about it just that little bit more. And I'm kind of intrigued by this pairing, and I like the chemistry that the two of them seem to have with each other.
Yeah, it's surprising, actually, isn't it? That there is some there, and I think there is some mileage in these two having a run as tag team champs, albeit I think both of them deserve something a bit more prominent, but nonetheless, they are where they are, and I think they'll make the most of it. They're both very good workers. You're quite right, though. Bray Wyatt should have had a title win sooner. I was actually surprised that this was his first title since becoming a main part of the roster several years ago. I think that in many ways he's the biggest victim in the entire company to the PG era, because that whole gimmick would have worked so much better in the Attitude era. And we know that really isn't a variety of reasons going to come back, but if you think back to The Undertaker and The Ministry, some of the very dark, very intense type of angles and storylines and skits and segments they used to run with him, now that kind of stuff would be tailor-made for Bray Wyatt, but they just don't want to give that, because a lot of what we see, you know, 90% of the TV that's put out there by the WWE is light-hearted entertainment now. So really serious, really dark, really edgy angles, storylines, the things of the past nowadays, unfortunately. And Bray Wyatt is one of those, both as a performer and as a gimmick, that really lost out. And I think that if he had that scope to be more creative and be involved in those kind of darker, deeper types of angles and storylines, then his character would have been significantly more effective.
Yeah, and I think that as well, the fact that, you know, the new face of fear was actually the constant face of defeat hasn't really helped his character along the way. Moving along anyway to Nikki Bella and Carmella and some pigtails.
Yeah, I mean, Nikki Bella rocked those pigtails. That they were quite...
it was the best part of the match, shall we say.
Yeah. It just proved my point about Nikki Bella. I've always had a downer on her in terms of an in-ring worker ever since we started doing this pod some 18 months ago. And, you know, the match proved why. I mean, we're seeing the likes of Sasha Banks, Charlotte, Bayley, Natalya having much, much better matches. And now, Nikki Bella's not a complete embarrassment in the ring. Absolutely far from it. But she's well below the level of those girls. And I think that really having a feud with somebody like Carmella, she's at her level now. She's not somebody who should be the pinnacle or focal point of the female division on Raw or SmackDown. And so the fact that she's having these kind of mid-card type of matches and feuds is about the right place for her to be nowadays. She's clearly not the level of worker that exists at the top of both rosters on Raw and SmackDown. And in a way, it would be a shame if they went backwards and started to push her towards another title run. I think that would be undoing a lot of good work that the WWE has done in the last 6 to 9 months in trying to get some credibility for the female divisions on both sides. So, it wasn't a great match. It was quite sloppy in various parts. I don't know if you noticed, but Carmella had a black eye, which was actually something that Nikki Bella gave her on SmackDown a few days earlier, because Carmella ended up giving Nikki Bella a chipped tooth on TV, I think, a week or two before that. So there is some genuine animosity between the two, which is perhaps why some of what you saw was fairly stiff, and you know, that was not accidental, that was quite intentional. But nonetheless, it was not a great match, and I'm happy that Nikki Bella is not a prominent part of the female division on SmackDown, or that for that matter.
No, I think functional is the nicest way I could put it, and I'd say that the match quality certainly picked up next. Although I've got to say my interest didn't really, as much as it was a good ladder match for the Intercontinental title between Miz and Dolph Ziggler, and it was a good match, I just wasn't particularly interested, and I'm not sure, maybe it's because I've seen Dolph Ziggler lose more times than I've seen Bray Wyatt lose, and I've seen the Miz and Dolph Ziggler fight each other I don't know, every week for the last 4 months, it seems like. Am I being harsh?
It's a feud that will never end. just when you think it's over and they're moving in different directions, they come back together again, don't they? I mean, granted, they've had some, you know, really good matches over the last several months, but these are two guys that, you know, especially on a weekly TV show supplemented by monthly pay-per-views, we've seen against one another, either in singles competitions, tag, six-mans, whatever, multiple occasions, and there's really nothing more to see from them. I mean, they've exhausted their feud and then some. But nonetheless, they were booked together again as part of this ladder match. It went nearly 25 minutes. For me, that was just a bit too long, and that's partly why the first 10 minutes especially seemed to be quite slow and not very interesting. But certainly in the second half of the match, it really started to pick up, and I think in the end, for me, it was actually bordering on a great match. The Miz, another great performance. Dolph Ziggler is a very good worker, but, you know, again, we've seen so much from him that there's really nothing that he can do now that is different or surprising or original. We've seen it all from Dolph Ziggler, and, you know, that's why I've speculated in the past that his time in the company might be coming to an end, because when characters reach that position and, you know, that famous term, creative of nothing for you, you know, I think that may apply to Dolph Ziggler very, very soon. I just don't see where they can really go with him that'll make anyone really care all that much about him or take any interest in him. There's just nothing really there anymore.
What about a character change, though? You know, the heel turn, I think there was an opportunity crying out for him maybe in that match between Miz and Sami Zayn. Something for them to do something, you know, to create a bit of interest in him, at least do something with him. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, the Dolph Ziggler gimmick was always more suited to a heel character than a face one. And it's a surprise that they never really went back to turning him heel. But I just think that even as a heel, you know, he's worked in that kind of role in the past as well, and he's just not somebody that they really fancy in that kind of position, I think. And they've got a preference for pushing some of the younger talents as heels, and certainly on the SmackDown side, there's quite a prominence of heel characters and fewer on the babyface side, and perhaps that's why they're reluctant to turn him heel again and keeping on the face side. And it kind of highlights a more broader problem, does this feud in this match, because you know, the SmackDown roster does feel desperately thin. I mean, the show itself, the SmackDown live show week to week, is actually a good show, and in my view, a more consistent show than Raw. But it's just feeling really light, and when it feels that way, it's difficult to come up with different program, a different storyline for the different talents every few weeks. And that's why we're seeing increasingly on this side, feuds carrying out over several months. You know, I mean, Baron Corbin and Kalisto has been carrying on for a couple of months, and Dean Ambrose and AJ Styles, you know, has been carrying on for several months, and Alexa and Becky Lynch. And we saw all of these matches on the show, and you know, overall, I thought it was a very good show. But the lack of real depth to this roster, I think, is starting to hurt, and that's why we're seeing the same matches over and over.
Yeah, I mean, I do think it was the right call to keep the title on Miz. That's clear at the moment, and you know, build something new with somebody else on there. And you mentioned Baron Corbin, Kalisto. I mean, again, this is another one that, did anybody in the arena actually care about this match? You know, given that Baron Corbin's destroyed Kalisto in minutes for how long, and then they have a 13-minute match with chairs. You know, there was a few nice spots because Kalisto is, you know, he's really good, you know, for his style. And he'd be, to be honest, I think he'd sit really well with the Cruiserweight division. But this is a thing, you know, I feel like this pay-per-view was kind of like, I felt like I've been watching SmackDown again, you know, and I kind of watched the same show week in, week out for too long now. And then this, maybe this is again, this is why we're suffering. It's just kind of like a level of boredom almost, and an apathy that these again, you know, it's just, yeah, I mean, like, oh, so, you know, like they're fighting. Oh, so what? They've got chairs. Yeah. And?
That's right. Yeah, I mean, the crowd was not exactly coming unglued when these guys came out and ready to have their match. I mean, my expectations were probably about the same level as expecting a 9 out of 10 performance out of Dejan Lovren, to be quite frank. So I wasn't really expecting much at all. But nonetheless, I actually was quite pleasantly surprised by this match. I thought it was better than most people, if not everyone, was expecting. You know, there was good action. A lot of it was down to Kalisto. You know, he was the one who, you know, really sold things well, you know, took some great bumps, and was working all around Baron Corbin. And put in one of the night's best performances, in fact. And that's what Kalisto can do. And it was one of the better big man, little man type matches we've seen in the WWE for quite a while. So the match itself was good, but you're quite right. It felt, again, like the same old, you know, we've seen these two guys at it for weeks on end now, and we've become accustomed to, haven't we, seeing feuds begin and end within a matter of 4 to 6 weeks, and to see feuds stretch out over 2, 3, 4, or even more months, is something we're not used to nowadays. And it certainly doesn't help when you've got a weekly TV show where all of these talents are on TV pretty much on a weekly basis. You know, the benefit of something like an NXT show is that it's a 1 hour show and they can't get everyone on the show every single week, which means that sometimes it could be 3 weeks, even 4 weeks before you see an individual. So they're kept more fresh by being exposed less on TV. Whereas these guys, every single week, pretty much, we're seeing them. And, that's why storylines, feuds, programs, their shelf life is reached a lot quicker. That's another drawback of these longer TV shows.
Yeah, I mean, but you mentioned there NXT. I mean, to contrast that, you know, you've got Nakamura and Samoa Joe. Now, they have been feuding for the best part of 3 months or more. Now, that feud to me still feels fresh, and I still can't wait to see them two fight again. Whereas you go to Raw and SmackDown, and you're seeing the same feud week in, week out. You know, they're having, but maybe because they're having matches every week, and we're having pay-per-views every 2 or 3 weeks, that I'm just, it's like this saturation point. You know, I'm almost punch drunk. I've seen this so many times that it's like, it's like I really like Police Academy 1. I quite like Police Academy 2. But once we got to sort of Police Academy 10, I was losing the will to live. You know, so I think it's this concept that NXT recognize the concept of less is more, whereas on Raw and SmackDown, they have quite the opposite. And I know, obviously, like you say, look, we know the roster on SmackDown is painfully thin, but the way that it's written, you know, we're seeing them week in, we're seeing the same interaction week in, week out. And I think that's what's really hurting the interest levels. It's just for me, it is that contrast between how it's handled on NXT as to how it's handled on the main roster. And for me, you can have, you know, feuds that are stretched out over time, but they've got to be, you've got to keep our interest peaked at a certain level, you know, tease us with something, not actually keep giving us it every week. You know, if I'm getting, I like steak. If I have steak for tea every night, after 2 weeks, I'm fed up of steak. You know, steak isn't a treat anymore, is it?
Well, that's right. And, you know, the disappointing thing is that this was an issue when we had the brand split previously, when Raw and SmackDown were separate. We were seeing the same types of issues again, especially on the SmackDown side, which had the smaller roster the first time round. And we were seeing feuds and matches being stretched out over longer than they otherwise would have been if rosters were all together as one. So I was hoping that this time round they would have learnt that lesson from last time and had a way to put it right for this time. The only real way around it is to have bigger rosters. Now, the WWE across Raw, SmackDown and NXT does have a lot of talent on its book, but they're keeping the rosters very, very separate. And I certainly think that there's a case for bringing some of the NXT talent up, not necessarily full-time onto Raw and SmackDown, but certainly at least to work the TV shows for Raw and SmackDown. So at least it kind of adds a few more faces to both rosters. So at least for TV, means there's more opportunities to come up with different kinds of feuds and programs. And it also can help with transitioning talent from NXT into Raw and SmackDown. And that might be one answer. But yeah, the whole stale, repetitive kind of feel to it where you seem to be seeing the same things, the same feuds, same programs, same matches over and over. Unfortunately, unless there's a massive change, it's something I think we're going to be stuck with.
Yeah, unfortunately, I do agree. I mean, almost to the exception is this Alexa Bliss and Becky Lynch match, in that we haven't seen them actually get in the ring and fight too many times. This is probably one of the few exceptions to the rule here. You know, we see them have interaction, but their actual matches have been kind of spread out, and I think that's kind of helped. And I think also, I think that the changing of the title was probably well timed, actually, and a nice little move to freshen up the women's division.
That's right. Yes, it was good to see them elevate Alexa Bliss, who became the women's champion for the first time, the SmackDown brand, and it was an okay match. I thought it just went a bit too long, 15 minutes for these two. Felt a good 5 minutes longer than it should have been. I think they could have had a pretty decent, if not a good, 10-minute match, but Alexa especially is still relatively inexperienced, and this was perhaps a bit too much of an ask for her to work a good 15-minute match. So they started it off slow, as you'd expect, and tried to kind of speed it up towards the end, but it really didn't catch on, and they lost the crowd quite early on. And the crowd was quite clearly bored, and to be honest, I was as well. And you know, when it was over, it was good to see Alexa come over, you know, play with the title, albeit, you know, Becky's a favourite of mine. But it was just a bit too long a match, and possibly even my least favourite match of the night, if I'm being honest. So I'd like to see if Alexa has another match on an upcoming pay-per-view for it to be no more than 10 minutes, because I don't think she's ready to have matches this long.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point. And it's, like you say, it is still quite early in the development, but because we've got two women's rosters that, you know, some of the women had to be called up from NXT perhaps before they were actually ready and in a position to really move up and do themselves justice. But, you know, it is what it is. So what of the main event then, the TLC match? Because I'll be honest, Mo, I'm a huge fan of AJ Styles. I think he lives up to his name. He is phenomenal. I think he's been absolutely sensational in his time with WWE. But I'll be honest, this was probably one of the most disappointing matches I've seen him in. But maybe that's because I've just seen too many TLC matches and, you know, chairs and tables and ladders and everything else in all these gimmick matches. Maybe I've just seen too many of these sort of stunt show matches.
Wow, that's completely different to my opinion of the match. I thought it was a fantastic match, actually. And the reason why is because I thought that they paced it really, really well. And for some, the end angle might have been something that really sported for them. But if anything, I thought it really enhanced the whole story of the match. So for those that aren't aware, AJ and Ambrose are going at it and coming close to half an hour into the match. So it was a very long match. James Ellsworth, Dean Ambrose's trusted friend, turned up.
The turtle without a shell. Sorry.
That's right.
The turtle without a shell. The alien.
Yes,
sorry,
yes.
Go on.
Yes. He of a very unique appearance and no jawline. He turned up and I was expecting him to try and go after AJ Styles, and he initially sort of did. You know, just when we thought Ambrose was going to win the title as he was ascending the top ladder to claim the WWE Championship, who pushes the ladder over but James Ellsworth? And that certainly caught me by surprise. I wasn't expecting that, to be honest. And I don't think many other people were. And, you know, I looked at it, I thought, wow, that was really well done. I thought that was such a fantastic angle. And, you know, that then allowed Styles to recover, get back into the ring, climb the ladder and reclaim the, and therefore retain the title. And, I thought it was a really good match. I thought there were some fantastic spots through the match. Obviously, the fact that there were about a zillion, announcers tables at ringside helped. Certainly we've part of that stunt show, and AJ Styles delivered an amazing, amazing springboard 450 off the top rope, off onto Ambrose and put him through a table, and that was one of the best spots of the whole night. And now AJ Styles showed his athleticism. He's just an amazing athlete, an amazing worker. So I kind of get that. For some people, the TLC match might not have been quite as exciting. For me, it was more of a slow burner type match. It wasn't something that was exciting the whole way through, but for me, it built into a crescendo towards the end, and I thought it turned out to be really good. And the Ellsworth angle with the heel turn was a pleasant surprise, and I like that too. So, difference of opinion there, Andy.
Yeah, I mean, I've got to agree with you. I thought there were some excellent spots in there. That one with AJ Styles, that got me going, wow. And I had to watch that back again, you know, a few more times. That was incredible. There was a couple of other really good spots in there. I say maybe it's just because I just got so fed up of seeing, you know, the tables, ladders and chairs everywhere. You know, it's almost like, you know, having sort of five, or the Hell in the Cell, you know, having three, four cell matches that by the time you get to the last one, it's like, oh, you know, it's again and again, you know, a bit too much. If we'd saved it and just had the one TLC match in there, I think that you know, could have kept it a bit more special. But there's little thing. I did like the ending as well. Like you said, you know, the surprise factor. I like that. But there's still bits in there. I must admit, as Dean Ambrose was going up there, I was thinking, oh, no, no, not Dean Ambrose, not again. He was such a disappointment as champion. And there's still, he still can't throw a punch. That is one of my things with Dean Ambrose. You know, I kind of like the character, although I thought it got too goofy, is he still cannot throw a believable punch. These punches are awful. They really are. You know, they miss by, you know, sort of 6 inches. It's just far too noticeable, and it kind of takes you out. I know it's not real, but it takes me out of the moment, and it's like, oh, you know, and sometimes his selling, it's so inconsistent as well. You know, he's really selling something, and then a minute later, he's running up the ladder, you know, and it's like, oh, I don't know, maybe that's just me being picky with Dean Ambrose.
No, I mean, I think that with the right opponents, he can have really, really good matches, and I thought this was a really good match. But is he an AJ Styles type of worker who can go in there and carry almost anyone to a good match? No, he isn't. No, he's a good couple of levels below that. But, yeah, I mean, there's elements of what he does that aren't the best. And, you know, I mean, Alexa Bliss, for example, I noticed that some of her punches looked absolutely horrible and were missing by a good... I mean, she was punching a forearm. If you go back and watch the match when Becky Lynch was prone on the ground, she was doing a bit of ground and pound as Alexa. Punches were missing by a good 9 to 12 inches. It looked really, really embarrassingly bad. And, you know, again, it's down to the kind of lack of experience. And I mean, it's the sort of thing that you can almost excuse for somebody with that lack of experience, but Dean Ambrose has been around for quite a while now, and you certainly expect a bit better from him. But yeah, my only real concern is that I look at the SmackDown male roster, and who else can they go to as a viable opponent, as a credible opponent for AJ Styles? And that's what worried me about watching SmackDown this week, is that feud still isn't really at a complete end. And I mean, it's perhaps to a large extent because they haven't got any other suitable opponents for AJ Styles that they're having to keep Dean Ambrose in that mix. And again, that will only add to the stale feel to the show, despite the fact that even with that stale feel, it still turns out to be a pretty decent show week to week. So that's the only weird thing about the whole thing.
Yeah, you've kind of preempted my question, which would have been, you know, I love AJ as champion, but the thing is, what next? You know, who really can be next for him? I mean, as a one-off, him and Dolph Ziggler, I'd like to watch that just as a match, you know, maybe on TV or something like that, just because I think that would be a great match to watch. But in terms of an ongoing feud and to have a program and a viable opponent, you look around and you think, unless John Cena's going to come back and then they resurrect that feud, who can they really get in there right at this moment in time, week to week with him? Because it is pretty thin, isn't it? And that is the real concern there, because I'd say SmackDown's an easier show to watch than Raw. It's not always necessarily better than Raw, but it's always, I'd say, easier to watch because of the time. But it desperately needs something, SmackDown. Maybe, you know, a couple, two, maybe three bodies. Maybe get one across from Raw. Maybe call up one from NXT. It needs some fresh blood in there, doesn't it?
Oh, I totally agree. Yeah. I think they're going to try and muddle through December into January, leading up to the Royal Rumble. And I don't think that they'll move any talent between the rosters before the Royal Rumble. But I just don't see how they can carry on after the Royal Rumble with the same roster. I'm just looking at the roster for SmackDown right now, and they've got nobody. Absolutely not one single individual that they can move into a feud with AJ Styles next week on SmackDown. Not one. I mean, John Cena's not around. He's doing movies and TV appearances and all sorts of things. You know, Randy Orton is a viable opponent, but he's currently one half of the tag team champions and he's doing the whole Wyatt thing. The Miz, you know, could be a good opponent, but he's a heel and they're not going to do heel versus heel. And the Undertaker will only appear once or twice a year, so he's not going to be turning up and working a feud with AJ Styles week to week on SmackDown. And there's nobody else. I mean, half the roster's tag team wrestlers, and of the other few singles wrestlers, they're all completely buried in almost like glorified jobbers like the Apollo Crews of this world. And, you know, that's going back to my earlier point that there's a real dearth of faces on this brand at the moment, and the company really needs to do something about that. So we talked about TLC. Well, you know, the whole SmackDown roster is in need of TLC, and certainly needs some sprucing up, and it needs it sprucing up very, very soon.
Can I suggest a name?
Go on.
Shinsuke Nakamura. How excited would that make you feel if you had Nakamura turn up on SmackDown and then we have an AJ Styles Nakamura feud? How would that spike your interest?
Probably more excited than John Flanagan after he scored that famous goal at Tottenham Hotspur 3 seasons ago. Yeah, that would certainly get my attention. That's a feud that was fantastic in New Japan Pro Wrestling. Shinsuke Nakamura and AJ Styles worked some magic together over in Japan up until a year or two back, and had just some amazing matches. And you know, we've seen Shinsuke Nakamura on NXT, and you know, he's got this charisma, this personality, and this presence that very, very few talents on the entire roster, never mind NXT, can say they have. And you know, he's somebody who's clearly not in much need of development. I mean, in the ring, he's as good as anyone in the business. And the only real reason he's over on the NXT brand at the moment is that they want to perhaps just brush him up on his promos and in terms of working in front of the camera, working for TV. It's good to have him on NXT, but he's clearly ready to come up and step up. And I'd like to see him come up sooner rather than later. I mean, I've talked for a while now that I expect him to turn up after WrestleMania, but if he can be brought up prior to WrestleMania, albeit he's only just regained the NXT title in Japan this past weekend, after the Royal Rumble would be an ideal time. And then, you know, building up for a match between AJ and Nakamura at WrestleMania, you know, for a 3-month build. And if it's done right, then, you know, it can be something really special and magical. So that'd be an ideal opponent. But do I think that'll happen? I don't think so. I think that they will stick with, I think is their plan of keeping on NXT until after WrestleMania. And I think it will be after WrestleMania that he'll be brought up. So, if they are going to bring any new opponents in, unfortunately, it might have to be somebody from the Raw brand rather than from NXT, is my view.
I would be inclined to agree, but I think there is a real opportunity here in that, you know, everything's about timing. Now, you know, we've been saying about there's nobody. Yeah, this is almost the opportune time for AJ Styles to cut a promo on SmackDown saying there is nobody. I've got no opponents. There's nobody at my level. Cue Nakamura and use him in maybe a similar-ish way in which they introduced Kevin Owens when he was still the NXT champion. You know, he was getting that exposure. He's got the belt on his arm. Perhaps build towards them actually having a match at Royal Rumble. And then the same way that they transitioned Owens over to the main roster and then he, you know, he then handed the belt over. He did the job at NXT, you know, handed the torch over. It could be the time for Nakamura then to pass the torch on to perhaps Bobby Roode. Is that a possibility, do you think?
It could well be. I mean, I'm expecting the takeover after, just before the Royal Rumble. You know, we've seen just how polished and most complete a performer Bobby Roode is. He honed his craft extremely well during his 12 years in TNA, and certainly in terms of in-ring work, in terms of personality, presence, promos, he's got the lot. So, you know, he'd be a great champion to carry NXT into 2017 and well into that year. But he's another one like Nakamura, who's, you know, into his late 30s now, and time's running out. I mean, you don't want to be bringing all these guys into onto the main roster when they're about to turn 40, which, I mean, they're in, you know, very late 30s. And that's the only thing about some of these guys. You know, Bobby Roode and Nakamura aren't the only ones. There are, you know, two or three others as well. Austin Aries, for example, is another very exceptional talent. And, you know, he's certainly another one who can step up and perform at main event level from day one. But, you know, he's about 38, 39, and there's no signs that they're going to be calling him up imminently. So, it's a delicate balancing act that I think that somebody like a Triple H is trying to play here, in that they've developed the NXT brand, and it's a viable touring product now. They do run shows outside of the Florida area, and they're making increasing amount of money out of the brand. So they don't want to completely deplete the roster and send all of its best talent to Raw and SmackDown. But at the same time, fortunately, Raw and SmackDown are missing out by not having some tailor-made talent that are currently on the NXT roster. It's a shame that that's the case. And that's why I said earlier on that I'd like to see some of the NXT talent be able to work NXT and one of the main roster brands. And I don't see why that you know, these brands should, you know, well, certainly NXT and the two main brands should be mutually exclusive. I'd like to see some of the talent be able to work both over 3, 4, 5, 6 months.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned Austin Aries, and they used him on in the, you know, in the commentary booth on the 205 Live. Now, personally, I think he could be a great way of really sort of helping to bring that cruiserweight division on. You know, he is the guy who can cut a promo, who, you know, who really can carry himself, and he's got that experience that you talk about now. Because, you know, these experienced guys, yes, they're helping to really push and promote the NXT brand, but I think they're also helping, you know, some of these guys who are coming through the development. They're getting to work with these experienced ones, and they're not just experienced, but, you know, they are top level. They're elite performers in the world. So they've had that experience then of working with these older guys who've been around and are as good as anybody at their craft. So I think, what about that then? Is Austin Aries using him to really sort of elevate that that cruiserweight division?
That's a very good idea. Austin Aries is somebody who's got a lot of experience working with smaller talent cruiserweights like heavyweights, and he's had that experience going back over 15 or more years. And you know, I think that he'd certainly fit the Brian Kendrick spot a lot better than Brian Kendrick does. I mean, I've got a problem with Brian Kendrick because he's a guy who's clearly talented and he's a good worker, but he's a guy that also the WWE audience lost interest in, you know, good, what, 10 years ago, was it? 11, 12 years ago? And he's just somebody who's not very exciting. One of the unique selling points about cruiserweight division is, or should be at least, that it's different to the heavyweights. And the way in which they differentiate themselves is by working a quicker, faster, more acrobatic, jaw-dropping style. And Brian Kendrick really doesn't do that, whereas somebody like an Austin Aries can, and he does. And he can work some fantastic matches. I've seen him have some phenomenal matches in promotions like TNA and Ring of Honor. But Brian Kendrick is just a good worker. He's not a great worker. And that's why the matches that we've seen, you know, either on Raw as part of the Cruiserweight division or on the new 205 Live show, none have been great, but they've been good. And for this division to make an impact and to get people's attention and to start getting over, it needs talent to be exceptional or really good. And, I suppose we should segue into 205 Live then, because, this is a show that launched a couple of weeks ago. And, my overall impressions are that it hasn't really overwhelmed me. I've not been too excited by the show. The main reason why is I think that they haven't got a particularly great roster. If you asked the likes of me and others who follow wrestling from around the world, if you said to us, right, WWE wants to put together a cruiserweight division, and it's what going to have initially perhaps about 16 contracted talents to fill out this division, and pull together a list of talent from around the world, whether it's Japan, Mexico, UK, the US independent scene, only perhaps one name on the entire 205 Live division roster that I've chosen to actually go onto it, and that would probably be Tozawa, Kira Tozawa. And he's not even somebody who's being pushed at all. And all the rest, I wouldn't have really chosen. I mean, Jack Gallagher is probably the one that stands out at the moment the most, because he's fantastically entertaining. He's different. He's original in a way in that, originally in the sense that he's doing stuff on WWE television that nobody else does, and nobody else has really seen on that show. And what he's doing is stuff that fans of British wrestling have seen over many, many years. I mean, he's working Johnny Saint spots and the likes of them. And
it just feels fresh for the audience, though, doesn't it? Because, I mean, you said the 205, it hasn't really caught your imagination. The thing as well, I feel like, because it's being taped at the same arena as SmackDown, it's almost like the arena's too big and the audience is quite cold. And that lack of atmosphere doesn't help the matches. And as much as I think there's some talent on that roster. I mean, but like Rich Swann is, Cedric Alexander. You mentioned Jack Gallagher. There's, there are some talented guys there that could have some really good matches. But yeah, there's something not quite right. I think that smaller arena was kind of with a more intense atmosphere was more fitting. And yeah. And it's maybe that's not helping it. But then, like you say, Jack Gallagher, he was something different. And that was something there that the audience was pretty cold, but the more that match went on, the more they were getting into it, the more they were enjoying him.
Yeah.
And it was, yeah, it was just something different. And I do kind of enjoy, something I do enjoy about the cruiserweights in that I really enjoyed with the CWC was those different types of styles. It wasn't all Lucha Libre, cruiserweight action, but them different styles mesh nicely in that they were quick and there was something, even the technical ones, it was quick. And that's what kind of set it apart from, heavyweights fighting. It was that slightly quicker pace and it was great to watch. And I just think, I mean, do you agree that, that the actual setting is kind of important in that the smaller arena gives it a little bit more of an intense atmosphere and maybe helps give something to them, a bit more feedback to them. You feel like you're really in there with them.
I agree totally. Yeah, absolutely. I thought it was a mistake for them to decide to tape these shows live straight after SmackDown because once SmackDown's over, I'm pretty sure that a certain element of that live crowd decides to go home. They don't want to sit through 205 Live. And that perhaps explains why the lighting, around the crowd is darkened and to perhaps hide the fact that a lot of empty seats start to appear as soon as SmackDown's over. It would have been far better suited to a smaller venue, like the Full Sail one that they use for NXT, where it's a more intimate setting where the crowd knows that roster appreciates what it does and responds accordingly. And a crowd that's responsive, that's into the action, helps the talent get over more, helps the matches get over more, and helps everything to come across as better than it might otherwise appear in front of a dead, flat crowd. And we saw that during the Cruiserweight Classic over the summer, during that initial tournament when they were working these matches and these shows at Full Sail in front of a more knowledgeable crowd, and the matches were getting over much better, and also the talents were getting over well as well. And the talent would come across as stars because of the reactions, and the reactions are very important. And without those, then, you know, it just affects the whole perception of this show and this whole division. And you know, it's something I'd like to see WWE have a look at, because if it doesn't work out as a live show straight after SmackDown, then perhaps they should consider moving it to Full Sail, and even if it's taped and still aired after SmackDown on the WWE Network, but the reactions are far better, then, you know, longer term, I think that would be the right thing for them to do.
Yeah, I completely agree on that. I was actually going to suggest the same thing, as to, you know, move to just taping it, you know, maybe intertwine with NXT there when they're doing the tapings. I think the crowd would kind of appreciate that as well. It just makes for a better atmosphere, which makes for, you know, more feedback for the wrestlers, probably makes for better matches, more enjoyable, and the whole product just comes across on the screen as better and more meaningful. And that helps WWE overall, and hopefully they'll kind of see this and maybe look to kind of tweak it as they go along. Time for us to move on to Raw, though, because we are moving along quite swiftly here. We'll soon be running out of time. We had a new Raw Women's Champion over the past week. The belts changed hands once again, and it's as is becoming the tradition that Sasha Banks wins it on Raw and Charlotte wins it on the pay-per-views. I've got a slight theory on this, and I might be wrong, but I've got a theory that WWE are kind of trying to recreate the Ric Flair multiple title reigns through the 80s, where, you know, the belt would be passed back and forth, but perhaps accelerating it here with Charlotte. What do you think on that one?
Well, that's quite possible. That's right. I think that they see something really quite special in Charlotte, and I can't blame them, because she's fantastic talent, the best female wrestlers the company's ever had, and she's only been on the main roster for what, 18 months, less than that. But she certainly made an impression, and, you know, the fact that she's working the closing segments of Raw, the fact that she's worked main events on Raw, the fact that she's worked main events of pay-per-views, demonstrates and evidences the fact that she is special talent. And you know, her favourite dance partner is Sasha Banks, and they've got this chemistry together that works really well. And I thought that their match last week was fantastic on Raw, and it got over really well. And if anything, perhaps was the match that they should have had on pay-per-view last month. But I think that it's quite possible. I think that it makes a refreshing change from long title reigns, and increasingly nowadays we do see quite long title reigns on the, you know, Raw and SmackDown brands, and seeing one title have a bit of the hot potato treatment and being switched every few weeks isn't such a bad thing. And you know, I think Charlotte already has, is it the three title reigns? And
yeah, I think they're both on three now, aren't they? So
yeah, I think
I wonder if they're kind of, you know, almost like recreating, you know, trying to recreate a modern dynasty here between these two. You know how they talk about Trish Stratus and Lita, how, you know, how the title went back and forth between them and the matches they had, but maybe, you know, perhaps thinking about obviously the family history that Charlotte has, you know, in the terms of obviously back in the 80s, the you know, the times the title went back and forth with Ric Flair, and you know, the way I think with Charlotte, I don't think she's necessarily the best women's wrestler, or the, you know, or gives the best promo, but there's just something about her, the way she carries herself, and it's she has that feeling of specialness about her, and there is a chemistry there between them. But I think there's a real chemistry between the three of them there in Bayley, Sasha and Charlotte, whenever they work together in the ring, or whenever I've seen them work together in the ring, they do seem to have this very, very unique chemistry between them, don't they?
Well, that's right, absolutely. And I think the fact that they're friends also helps as well. Having that understanding between them, that camaraderie, having come together up through the NXT ranks certainly helps as well. And, you know, these girls are getting over now. I mean, for many, many years, the Divas division, as it was called, was just a sideshow, you know, just a time filler. Nobody really took it seriously. It was kind of chauvinistically looked at as, you know, some eye candy.
It was the brown panties piss break. That's effectively what it was, really, wasn't it?
That's right, yeah.
Which is demeaning, you know, for considering what came before them at times, and then what we're seeing now, you know, sandwiching them. We've seen some great women's wrestling. So, I agree. It's fantastic to see the women showcased in a way that they should be.
Absolutely, yeah. They're being presented and portrayed as athletes equal to the men, and they're being put over as talented female athletes who should be taken seriously rather than just another meaningless part of the show that nobody should really take seriously. So that's great to see, and that's why I really enjoy the segment on Raw. And it was quite predictable. I mean, Charlotte ostensibly was there to apologise to Ric Flair, and then she didn't, and turned on him and made him cry again. And it helped to get over that storyline that she's got with Sasha Banks to set up a 9-man match. I think they've really got to do something about that title, though. I mean, two women having an Iron Man match, really? But nonetheless, that's going to be a 30-minute match, and I think it'd be fantastic. I really hope they don't try to overthink it like they did. Was it the Survivor Series, or was it another show? No, it was Hell in a Cell, wasn't it? Last month, the month before.
It was a little bit convoluted.
Yeah.
I'll say that the two matches that Sasha Banks and Bayley had in NXT last year, when Bayley won the title, and then the Iron Woman match that they had, those were the two, probably the two best matches that I watched last year. They were incredible, and if Charlotte and Sasha can have an Iron Woman match that's even close to that one that Sasha and Bayley had last year, I think they will be hitting the headlines, because that was incredible. And I think this could be a real, real opportunity for them.
Oh, yeah, totally, yeah. You know, and again, there's always the chance that they could end up working the main event at Roadblock a week Sunday. Albeit, you know, we've got Kevin Owens and Roman Reigns up for the WWE Universal Championship. And, you know, the Universal Championship wasn't the main event match at Hell in a Cell, and the question as to whether they'll want to have that as part of the undercard for the second successive Raw exclusive pay-per-view. Even if it goes on, you know, second to last or third to last, I think that if they work it right, they could have the show-stealing match and possibly the best match of their careers. That's how high my expectations are for that match, and I think that the storyline work that they're doing between them certainly is adding all the relevant spice to it. And I think if they have another great segment on Raw next week like they had this week, it will be the most anticipated match of the show. And if they accomplish that, then that's yet another great step in the progression of the female division on Raw, and also in directly, that's a benefit to SmackDown's female division too.
It's just while you're mentioning Roadblock, you know, very briefly, is it an event you're looking forward to then? I know it's yet another pay-per-view, only, you know, like a fortnight after the last one, which is something I think they really do have to look at. I think there's just far too many pay-per-views. There was already too many one a month, I felt. Now it's just ridiculous. But is there anything apart from that women's championship match that you think this could be a really good show, you know, heading into the new year.
Yeah, I think it will be. I mean, Kevin Owens and Roman Reigns is something that have been gradually building over a number of weeks, and it will come to a head. And you know, they had a very good non-title match. Was it this week or last week on Raw? It all becomes a blur, these TV shows, don't they? But I know that they've had a recent match on TV, and I thought it was really good. And you know, that's something I'm certainly looking forward to. And that's certainly a few that hasn't could have been done to death by any means. And obviously on the undercard, you can look forward to Seth Rollins and Chris Jericho in a singles match, and those two have certainly built things nicely for that match, following on from the angle that they ran all this past week. You know, these are two matches that, build up aside, should be really good matches. And then when you've got Sasha and Charlotte as well, those three matches on their own should make the show almost certainly a very good, if not a great, pay-per-view. And I'm sure they'll have some decent action on the undercard too. So whilst getting two pay-per-views in a month from the WWE feels like overkill in a way, this show should have a pretty decent lineup. So I'm actually looking forward to it.
Well, just finally before we go then, do you think the tag titles will finally change hands at Roblox? Just kind of, sorry to butt in, but just based on what we've been seeing the past 2-3 weeks, where, you know, the obviously there's been a lot of stress being put on, you know, the how many days it is, and they're about to equal the Demolition's record. I think there's so much being put on that, and the way that they're winning, I think that it's really pointing towards something coming up here.
Yeah, I think that a title change is imminent. And I think that they're just waiting to break that record. So as and when that title reign record that Demolition hold is broken by the New Day, that's the point at which it'll be the ideal time to take the titles off them. So I've got a feeling that they might just try and hold out until the Royal Rumble and go for a big title change then. You know, if they don't and they decide to do it on this show, then, whether the record's broken or it isn't broken, it's still been a heck of a title run. And it'd be nice to see somebody new with those title belts. And certainly the pairing of Cesaro and Sheamus has grown on me. And I think there's certainly that great chemistry between the two. They're real life, very good friends, and work between them certainly be coming along. So, you know, those two as champions would be worthy title holders. But even if it was Anderson and Gallows, I think those two as well, they've shown what they are capable of as a tag team in New Japan Pro Wrestling. Haven't quite hit those heights in the WWE, but I think with a good title run, they can certainly show what they're capable of. So whether it's either of those teams, I think that WWE won't go far wrong. But, you know, they could throw a complete curveball and, you know, bring out Demolition from out of nowhere, and Axe and Smash might, you know, go and beat the two, any two of the three from New Day, and keep their record intact. So anything can happen in the WWE, can't it?
that old adage. And what a way to bring the show to a close. But before we play our trombones into the sunset, anything you'd like to plug more?
Yes, just a very quick one. So I mentioned several weeks ago about the return of World of Sport Wrestling on ITV, and time slot is now confirmed for this, which is currently a one-off special. But I'm hoping, various people in British wrestling are hoping, that it will lead to a lot more. This special is scheduled for New Year's Eve for the 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. time slot. So New Year's Eve this year is Saturday, and it's scheduled for 4 o'clock. So it's a Saturday 4 o'clock time slot, like it used to have back in the day. And that's something I'm very much looking forward to, and I certainly urge all listeners to try and check out that show. The only slight downside is that the last half hour of the show will overlap with Liverpool against Man City, so it might be a bit of channel hopping between the two shows whilst that game is underway. But
There's technology more. People can there's iPlayers and the Hub and all the rest of it, or you can record it and Sky Plus it, whatever. But
multitask, have two screens on.
Yeah, listeners, use your technology, make the most of it, and make sure you watch it, whether you watch it live or you watch it afterwards. I agree. I think it's going to be a fascinating watch.
Yeah, it will be, absolutely. And it'll be good to see what the new generation of British wrestling got to offer. I mean, I know that a lot of people who watch WWE have been impressed by Jack Gallagher, and I can tell you that there's plenty, plenty more where he came from. You know, British wrestling is the real hot spot where it comes to young talent coming through. And that's why WWE, Triple H, William Regal are looking at British promotions and looking at what the British wrestling scene has got to offer, because there's such an overabundance of exciting, promising talent. I just don't know what to tell you. And you'll see some of that on World Sport Wrestling on New Year's Eve, 4 o'clock on ITV. And I'm sure you won't be disappointed if you watch it.
Absolutely not. Yeah, so that wraps things up for this week's Pro Wrestling Index. Obviously, I want to thank my audio tag team partner, Mo Chatra. Thank all of you, our lovely listeners, for listening to the show and downloading. Please continue to do so here on the Anfield Index podcast channel. But until next time, from myself, Andy Wales, it's bye-bye now.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads. Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Do you ever feel like your brain is on overdrive and your mind is constantly racing? The plans, worries, and to-do lists are never ending. Calm can help your mind take a break from the noise by softening anxiety symptoms in the moment and helping you cope with day-to-day stressors. Calm is the number one app for sleep and meditation, giving you the power to calm your mind and change your life. For listeners of the show, Calm is offering an exclusive offer of 40% off a Calm premium subscription at calm.com/stressless. Go to calm.com/stressless for 40% off unlimited access to Calm's entire library. That's calm.com/stressless.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker, Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author, Elizabeth Gilbert, about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.